All right.
Chris Sheridan.
Jason Napolitano, we're here.
And we are live on the Cosmic Eye Show. We're just jumping right in today.
All right.
Just jumping right in today. So this is a new thing we're doing during the week. I started doing this. There's an episode up from last week with a friend of mine called Scott Eschner, a.k.a. Scott Shadow. And Chris hasn't even heard that one yet. I'm going to put that one up tonight, actually, which is Thursday today. So these new shows will go up Thursday or Friday. And they're kind of a supplemental thing that we're doing on the Cosmic Eye podcast, a little less scripted and a little more sort of topical, I guess. Is topical a good word?
It is, sure. But it's also to be taken internally, too. So it can be used as a topical or an internal.
Oh!
It's all good medicine.
Oh, burn. Wow. Good stuff. And this coming from the guy, mind you, that used to do stand-up comedy. Excuse me. What was it?
Sit-down comedy, that would be.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, it just keeps getting worse.
It does keep getting worse. So. And I'm goading you into...
We'll see where it goes from here.
Downhill fast. That's where it's going to go from there.
Nice.
We haven't actually mentioned this before, I don't think, on the show, which is maybe we did in like the first episodes, but you have up a fantastic video that you did. It's a short film that you did when you were in school that actually won a Student Academy Award called Walk This Way.
It did.
And it's on your YouTube channel, right? So
yeah.
Tell them where they can see that, because it's a fantastic piece of art.
Yeah, just search Walk This Way and Chris Sheridan.
Okay.
Or just Sheridan. It'll come up. It's the picture of the guy in the wheelchair.
The dude in the chair.
That's the thumb. Yeah, right. Yeah. That'd be me on wheels. Yeah,
absolutely. All right, cool. And I just wanted to...
I think that's my answer to the Chinese, the fortune cookie. You're supposed to add in bed at the end of a fortune cookie reading, okay. You know, to make it funnier. I just add on wheels.
On wheels. All right, nice.
Yeah, that's my take on it. So
that's your unique contribution to the bad joke world.
Oh, yeah, like Chinese
to the
food.
Bad joke world.
On wheels. Yeah, yeah.
You really should be commended for that. And I am commending you. So the listeners may as well. We'll see what happens. So speaking of that, do check us out at cosmiceye.org or at anchor.fm/cosmiceye. If there's a topic you'd like to hear about that's off the wall or weird or fun, if you there's an option on there, which is kind of cool. And only one person has used it so far, so I highly encourage anyone who wants to do it to do it. But you can call and actually leave a question on there. It's like a voice recorded question, and we can either use it on there. So if you want to, use your recorded question on the show, go ahead and say, that we can do that. So just give us permission, and we'll actually cut the clip of your question in, and then we can talk about it, or we can just talk about whatever thing you want to talk about. On the show itself. So you say, hey, I'd love to hear about 2001 A Space Odyssey some more, and some insights into what the symbolism of food is in that, although we covered that last week. But that's an example. Food. So, okay, speaking of that, let's just pick a topic. Well, let's talk about food and spirituality. What do you think about that?
Yeah, okay. Sure.
I say that because I'm staring at a book that I'm reading right now called Aquaponic Gardening, and it is by Sylvia Bernstein, and it's fantastic. If you're not familiar with aquaponic gardening, it is where you can grow vegetables in an integrated environment where you're also growing fish. So the fish waste actually becomes the fertilizer for the vegetables, and it's incredibly good fertilizer, so you get a really nice yield of vegetables. And it's this kind of a closed system. It's a very cool thing. You can look it up on YouTube if you're interested in aquaponic gardening, or get that book. But what I wanted to talk about, I guess, is kind of the importance of spirituality and food. A lot of the stuff that's coming out of the permaculture community, and a lot of the stuff that's, kind of coming to the forefront of people's spiritual lives, is the choices that they're making in food. I think it's a really tangible way to be in touch with the earth, and to make choices that that are in line with what you believe. And I was kind of thinking about that last night. I find it one of the things I think that people are doing now, since they're less organized, I would say, I wouldn't say people are less spiritual. I would say they're less organized and less maybe, you know, religious in a sense, but I don't think that's the correct word, but I would say less, that's orthodox maybe, or less traditional religion oriented, right?
Dogmatic
maybe. Yeah. I don't want to give, you know, like organized religion a bad name. Because I think there's many, many, many valuable things in it, and we wouldn't have our spiritual traditions that are more eclectic today without them. You know, they've lasted for, you know, hundreds, thousands of years in some cases, and, you know, possibly longer. We don't really know. So, you know, the wisdom that comes up to us through the ancestors and through these ancient wisdom traditions is definitely to be respected. But what I'm finding is that people are making choices. I'm taking a long, long route to this. People are making choices, I think, in their lives, in their spiritual lives. For example, they want to be a vegan. And, you know, I'm trying to be more more vegetable-oriented. I'm trying to work on a vegetarian diet. I'm not at the vegan level yet, but I'm, you know, I'm experimenting with this. And, you know, I think that's a reaction to some of the things people see with the factory farming, with the industrialization, with the chemicals and the pesticides and all of this stuff. And, you know, we see all these documentaries about how the food system is so kind of rotten from the bottom to the top. But then there's all these wonderful bright spots of people doing this great organic work, and they're trying to work with the earth and its natural cycles and all this, right? So I think maybe that making those choices is almost like a spiritual choice. And I think those people, they get very passionate about, you know, trying to share their feelings on that with others and so on, in almost an evangelical way. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, definitely. It's in a lot of traditions there are food rules and restrictions. The Hindu might not want to eat a cow. Maybe you think that's, mm-hmm. you know, sacrilegious. Some people, crickets, which are a great protein source, could probably feed the world and get us off cows. But crickets are seen as good luck in a lot of cultures. Mm-hmm. In the Hebrew, ancient Hebrew tradition, and for at least some anyway observant Jewish people today, eating pork is not really kosher, so to speak, literally and figuratively.
Literally and figuratively.
And that comes, it comes through the, you know, the traditions that, you know, that give these guidelines. So food, what you eat, how you eat, when you eat, when you don't eat, there's fasting traditions. Eating is, in a way, it's really inseparable from, you know, at least the early forms that we still practice today, some form or another, of spiritual traditions and religions.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, it's interesting because people oftentimes look at their own, you know, food traditions, or their own religious food traditions as being somewhat constrictive or something like that, or maybe they don't want to follow them, or, you know, you get... you know, I mean, I think, like, for example, Catholics didn't used to eat meat on Fridays, and I don't think this is very common anymore. They would have fish instead, and they actually used to do that at school. They would serve fish on Fridays for the Catholics specifically. And most of the time,
I was in a public school system that was not predominantly Catholic.
And they still do it, right?
We also had chocolate milk on Friday, so nobody complained.
That was your compensation for no meat. You get,
yeah.
How can you eat your chocolate milk if you can't eat? Yeah, I got that. Was horrible. That was a horrible, horrible thing. But if anyone knows what I'm talking about, you know,
I got thanks.
I wish I could take that back, but I'm not gonna. Yeah. I'm not gonna cut these.
No,
I'm
we're
not
moving
gonna
forward.
Cut these things out because I think this freeform show is a fun thing we can do where it's like you just kind of hear the behind the scenes in a way. Because, you know, we do edit the show a bit for the Sunday show, and it's a little more polished. I don't know how much more polished, but a little more polished than you and I just talking shit, right? Like we like to normally
right,
do.
Right.
But, you know, so anyway, I think food is an interesting thing, and it's such a, yeah, obviously it's a huge part of our lives and our survival, but it goes so far beyond that. And, you know, the choices that we're making today and, you know, it's one of the things I think why it's such a powerful thing too, is because it's one of these things that we enjoy very, very much. And it's a visceral experience. And we, you know, we look forward to meals and stuff and so on. And one of the things I think that, you know, people are trying to get back to, and it's hard because everyone is so busy, but is, you know, a tradition of a meal times with family members, friends, you know, your community members, whoever you're living around and with, you know, with, you know, girlfriends, boyfriends, partners, whatever. and spending that time and taking that time to have that sort of communion with that person, and communion, and I'm using that very specifically, you know, the food is, you know, eating is a holy act. I mean, you know, and the thing that people, and I think this is why the vegan stuff is such a powerful thing for people, and why, you know, there is a lot of interest in it. You know, it's saying, look, I respect these fellow creatures and I don't want to see them harmed, and I don't want to see them killed, and I don't want to see them mistreated. You know, so I'm not going to participate in this system. You know, and oftentimes, I mean, I think those same people is, you know, are not necessarily anti-meat per se. A lot of them are. A lot of them are, you know, the Buddhists and certainly the religious ones. And you know, hard, I don't want to say hardcore, but, you know, super dedicated vegans. Obviously, there's a choice being made that's, you know, pro-animal and anti-animal death. And I understand that, and I don't disagree with it. But what I'm saying is I think a lot of people that don't eat meat are, you know, are also protesting sort of the factory farming and the inhumane conditions and so on that exist in these awful, awful processing plants, you know, for their own health and for the sake of the earth and for the sake of those particular animals that get, you know, ground up in that system. And I use that literally. It's awful, you know, and we've all seen these documentaries on YouTube and Netflix and wherever else they are floating around, and thank God they're out there. But you know, that's one aspect, you know, and that's, you know, I love where this kind of regenerative agriculture, the organic stuff, the humane farming, the permaculture stuff, it's moving in a different type of direction. It's you know, it's creating an ecosystem on a farm that's a living system. It has living soil, living and breathing and moving around, and well cared for and loved animals that actually are part of the farm ecosystem. So there's this new way of this, and this I found really cool. You may have seen this, you may have not. But basically, you know, most permaculture people think of animals as sort of land managers. So they kind of have a job, you know, on the farm. So they're not just walking around, you know, trying to be, you know, they're not products being fattened up or something. They're actually out working and doing animal stuff, you know, in a natural environment. So, for example, they'll take and cordon off an area and fill it with chickens. And this is an area that you want to weed, or you want to get rid of a bunch of particular ground cover or whatever, because you're going to put something else in there. You run chickens through it for X amount of days, and they clean up the whole area very efficiently. And, you know, they get to scratch around and do all their chicken jazz and, you know, and have a good time doing it. And they're helping you, and they're a part of the natural process. They're pooping on the ground. You know, they're putting fertilizer into the ground. They're aerating the soil while they're kicking it with their feet. I mean, it's amazing. But
yeah, and that's natural. That is in line with what they were naturally evolved or created,
right?
Or descended or ascended to. This is what they do. And yeah, they'll come back and sleep in the coop at night, but yeah, they'll run around and pick up bugs.
It's fantastic. You know, it's a holistic system. You know, they're integrated into the whole thing, and they're cared for, and I say cared for, you know, particularly on those types of farms, they literally are cared for. They're not treated like a commodity. And that's the thing that I think, you know, any like type of food production that's done in a commodified or industrialized way, I mean, to me feels like a rape of the earth, you know, and I use that very particularly. You know, and granted, we're all, you know, trying to do the best we can. And oftentimes we have to buy poor quality food and factory farm stuff because we just don't have the money. And I fully empathize with that. But there's ways to move away from that, you know, by eating less meat, for example, by, you know, planning ahead and cooking stuff in like crock pots and things, making your own bread, stuff that's not that difficult. It takes a little bit of time, but if you kind of, you know, pick a day and say, all right, this is going to be food prep day. On Saturday, we're going to do food prep day, and we're going to, you know, figure out what we're going to do for the week and prepare the meals and stuff. And we're going to make some bread and, you know, you can really start to kind of take control of that stuff. And I know you guys grow some herbs and stuff, right, around the house?
Yeah, we do. You know, basil is kind of self-perpetuating. If you clip off enough of it before you eat the entire plant, it'll grow a new one. You can clone it indefinitely. And it's actually, that's a really good place to start for people. If anybody uses basil in their salads.
Yeah.
You know, kind of pasta cooking or making pesto or whatever. Sure. It's fairly easy if you just kind of stay on top of it. And you get to see it. It's really neat because you get to see it, you get to smell it, and you get to taste it just, you know, within a week. It doesn't really take long.
No, it's super cool. You know, microgreens. I tried sprouting some wheatgrass. I did it wrong, and I got a really bad harvest of my wheatgrass. I have a very poor harvest. Right. There was if we were wheatgrass dependent, there would be a famine in the household, unfortunately. But I have since learned that what I did wrong, and I got a new batch of this is a weird thing. You probably know this. The listener may not. I did not. You can actually buy. So if you buy the wheat berries, so they're the little kernels, right? They're full kernels of hard wheat. Basically, it's called hard winter wheat or something, maybe. I don't know. Now I can't remember what. But if you just if you go, for example, to Whole Foods to the bins where the bulk stuff is, you're going to see the wheat berries, and they're like organic hard wheat berries or something like that. Basically, those are you sprout those and you grow and you put them in soil or some kind of soil material, and those are what sprout into the wheatgrass. But I had no idea. It was just, I thought you'd have to buy seeds or something online, but you know, you can just buy these things at the store. You can get them at Whole Foods. I think they don't have them at Sprouts. I looked for them at Sprouts, but they do have them at Whole Foods. They might have them at, oh no, they don't have bulk stuff at Trader Joe's, do they? They don't. So Whole Foods is a good place if you don't mind supporting Amazon, you know, Whole Foods is funny to me. It's like, I walk through that place and it's, I like the stuff that they have there. Don't get me wrong. It's wildly expensive and it's wildly corporate. And you know, I know like a lot of eco people use the term greenwashing. It's the ultimate in greenwashing because you're walking through this place and you're like, good God, this is like just eco consumerism. You know what I mean? But they have nice stuff there. Don't get me wrong. It's, you know, then there's a lot of great companies that they support and keep in business. So I'm not knocking them. I'm just, you know, the fact that Amazon owns them, I'm kind of aggravated about that. And that's one of my little pet peeves. I suppose what's the difference at this point? But at any rate, my whole thing with food and spirituality today, my little message is try little things at home that help to move you away from, you know, the consumerism and the materialism, and put more of the control of the food into your own hands. And even if it's something small, like herbs or making bread or sprouting some wheatgrass, you know, there's great videos on YouTube for all of this stuff. You know, and we've been trying to do that here at home. And yet, you know, it actually, the funny thing is it actually saves you some money. It saves you some money. So, you know, that's,
yeah, if you ever buy fresh herbs, they're kind of expensive for a relatively small package. Yeah. And even if you get a big bulk at a lower rate, you know, what family of two or four is going to use, you know, a pound of cilantro, you know, before it goes bad in 3 days? Well, you know, that's another thing too about the herbs. You can, especially basil, you can just pick as you go. Rosemary bushes are great, even in drought kind of places. You got to water them, but they'll survive the heat. They grow in the desert.
They grow out here.
We're in Arizona.
It grows here in Nevada. It's really, really hardy.
You know, even for erosion, and then it's the flowers, the bee, they're pollinating attractors. So bees come and use. So to talk about food eat food and make choices on how you eat, you know, when you eat, what you eat. It's, you can't do food without in some ways approaching so many other things. Yes, spirituality and religion, but you know, climate change and the environment.
Yeah, sure.
You know, are you monocropping? Are you eating from a factory farm with the methane gas? And I know some people laugh about cow farts and things like that.
Oh, it's a
but
major,
he might be doing more damage.
It's a major contribution.
You know, running through the drive-through than the SUV that you're driving
it,
through.
It is. It's no
the
joke.
Burger place.
It's no joke. And
you know,
absolutely.
It's also a philosophy, because something as simple as herb gardening in your windowsill in your studio apartment, most everybody can do something like that.
Exactly.
If you have a cup of water and a toothpick, you can grow an avocado seed, you know. It's quite possible. What it does, though, even if it doesn't save you money at the grocery store or replace, you know, a corporate you know, farming ConAgra or someplace like that in your grocery list, it connects you with life. It connects you with the living and the process of life. And to, you know, we talk about, you know, we're a spiritual being who, you know, happens to embody or is embodied inside a physical organism.
Yep.
We have this human being, this human body, and we live on this material earth plane.
Yeah.
And no matter how spiritual our origins and our destinies are, which I think is incredibly spiritual and way beyond this physical, while we're here, we do live here, and we do live in these bodies.
Yeah.
And you have to take from life to live. That every animal has to do it. You have to kill something to eat something.
That's
you
true.
Kill the tomato
That's
plant
true.
Or whatever. I mean, it's just something we have to do. And there's nothing really wrong with that. But it's how you do it. Now, stop this section on. And well, if you want a clue on how it's done, look at nature. Okay. The strongest lioness, who actually lioness does the hunting, does not take the strongest zebra, the alpha male, or the you know, the birth giving you know,
the
females
of the herd.
They take the weak.
Exactly.
In fish send a signal when they're in distress. That attracts the shark. I've seen barracuda just waiting around on a coral reef, just waiting on the perimeter. You can go up and hit them, and they don't even flinch. They're just waiting. They could eat any of these fish in a minute, but they don't. Until nature sends
that
signal. So,
and that's that natural balance that's already there that, you know, we need to recognize and tune ourselves into, because we're a part of that.
And that's why herb gardens are great.
Absolutely.
It. Because you can pluck from the herb, you know, plant on your windowsill and not kill the damn thing.
You
know what I mean?
You can
eat it, and you can help it continue and live and clone it and actually make more. You can make more than you could possibly eat if you get carried away
with
herb gardening.
You're right. And it's a micro level.
It shows that balance.
It's a micro level of what we could do on a bigger level if we do put a little planning into the way that we do stuff, right? I think and that's huge. That's a huge thing. It's a huge thing. It's a small thing, but it's a small thing that it actually is quite large. And the thing that I think is really cool about making little changes is that they add up so quickly and they turn into like this snowball effect. You know, you get this more makes more effect, and you know, it's like, oh, I started cutting out meat and I'm not eating fast food and hamburgers anymore. I start feeling better. I have some more energy. Therefore, I have some more time to cook. Therefore, I have even better energy. Therefore, I have more energy to go and exercise, and that gives me more energy. And then, you know, oh, hey, maybe I'm going to try to meditate a little bit tonight. It's like more makes more, you know, it builds on itself, and it's little steps taken consistently. And done with the right hearts, you know, kind of, you know, you need the right intention and the right heart with it too, right?
Oh, you definitely do. And we also have to rethink, you know, maybe what it means to eat even something like lettuce. You're talking about baby greens or, you know,
microgreens,
you know, juvenile lettuce
that
microgreens. Yeah. That, you know, restaurants, it's that spring salad.
I like
salad.
Juvenile.
Great
I like
mix.
Juvenile. So it's like they're teenagers. They're not microgreens. They're like you like to go right for the teenage lettuce. You don't mess around with the toddlers and with the baby greens.
No, let them live for a while. Wait till they're nasty and turn
like
against you.
You're
and,
like a 13-year-old lettuce with purple hair and a bad attitude. That's what you're digging, huh?
Yeah, that says I hate you in front of your friends. Just, you know, after
I love it.
Buy them a new
sorry,
car.
Sorry
yeah.
to interrupt, but I have to call you on so, that one. The juvenile.
But, well, you live in Las Vegas, and I believe there's I don't know if it's a pilot program or a full-scale operation But when you think of lettuce, you think of a farm. You think maybe of, you know, East of Eden or Mice and Men, and you're in the Salinas Valley, this rich California, you know, breadbasket with, you know, got acres of, you know, rich dirt, sure. and then you have the irrigation watering it, and year-round sunshine, and you know, heads of lettuce are coming from the earth, and it's awesome. That's one way to grow lettuce. The other way, what you're talking about, is the aquaponics.
Well, they're doing they're actually doing hydroponic stuff, but it is
but you can grow this stuff indoors exactly. in a big city, exactly. like you can convert an old office building and put up
it's super cool
electricity lights, yep. and it's sterile. It's never out in the world where it's going to get trampled on or feces or a bird or some you know the predators aren't there, the insects. You can completely control that. Plus, it's local.
Yeah, that's a super cool thing. That's
and it gets to the restaurants right away. You're eating fresh. And then the refrigeration and the transportation. See how it means? It just, you know, it snowballs like in a bad way, because then you have to have a diesel truck carting it over here that's running.
Well, it's all based
the chlorofluorocarbons in the air conditioner.
And it's all based on oil. The whole thing from top to bottom is an oil-based agricultural system. And that's its main weakness. You know, and I don't even – not – you know, we can get off our hippie high horse or whatever, because, you know, I the oil industry is a monster. We all know this. But the point is like being dependent on one anything is terribly insecure, and it causes massive problems when human beings rely on one resource. Like it's crazy. Any good designer.
Well, it's incredibly fragile.
It's incredibly fragile. And people forget that, like, from top to bottom, nearly all of our systems run entirely on oil, from energy production to transportation to agriculture to the plastic bag that you're carrying your stuff around in. It's all oil. And when you think about that, it's truly alarming. You know, I'm not going to get into all the crazy facts and figures and all this stuff that, you know, we all have heard it, and I'm not going to get on the high horse. But the point is like, when you start doing things on a local level and you start doing things without those inputs, without the chemical inputs, without the pesticides and herbicides, and you start using compost and using the earth's natural resources to rebuild the soil. And again, you're doing it on a local level. Yeah, there's going to be some fossil fuels involved, you know, transportation and stuff, but you minimize it. And after a while, we'll be able to completely kind of move away from that. But it takes small efforts from millions of people that it's going to create that change. It's not going to come from the top down by any means. You know, and so choices that you make, say, for example, like if you're in a big city like L.A., we have it here a little bit, but there's not as much available. But L.A. has tons of this kind of stuff. So like you join a CSA, join one of these CSAs and look up local CSA. You can pay a monthly or weekly fee to get, you know, vegetables delivered to your home, or you go pick them up from a farm, a local farm, and choose you in 50 or 100 miles of the place. And, you know, you're getting organic stuff, and you know that you meet the farmers. You can see where the stuff is being done if you want. You can go down there and meet them and so on and make it a part of your life. And it becomes real, you know, and that's a spiritual experience to go down and see where your food is coming. Where is the place that this food is coming from? Show your kids. Where is this food coming from? It doesn't just come out of a Walmart, you know. Yeah. It doesn't come out of a plastic bag. It doesn't come out of a factory. It's a living creature. It's a living being. It's a living entity that grew in the soil and out of the soil, just like we do. And I don't care if people want to pretend like they live in skyscrapers or not, and they do live in skyscrapers, but if they want to pretend like that's where we come from, we don't. We come from the dust of the earth. And the Bible is definitely, you know, right on the nose with that. That's us.
And then what do we do with the waste?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we're sticking that in a landfill.
But it all goes.
And I know there's recycling and things, but even the process of recycling
burns
oil and diesel.
Exactly. And that's another thing is like you start thinking about that. And if you know, if you've got a house and you've got a yard, you know, you can start composting. Like nearly half of your waste is food related, either, you know, peels, skins, you know, food you don't eat, whatever it is, right? And all that stuff can be composted. So can a lot of the paper products if they're shredded. And then, you know, there's a ton of different materials, the grass clippings, the the dry leaves that fall off the tree, you know, and there's great videos on compost, but you start composting and you tear up a part of your lawn and put a garden in. Man, if I had a yard, that whole thing would be ripped up. Like, I would be going to town and I'd replant it with ground cover, you know, make a food forest out of the damn thing. Believe me. If I own the place, obviously I'm not going to do that in a rental. I'd love to see that. You know, hey, where'd my front lawn go? I'm planting avocado trees and some peppers and, oh, interesting. Okay. But anyway, you know, that's something bigger, but we're talking about small steps and we're talking about food and spirituality and how you can kind of make that a living part of your life on this, tangent-oriented midweek show. So there you go. Do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah.
Do you have a tangent?
Well, we kind of started out talking about spirits with more of a loop.
It's a loop.
It's an orbit.
It's not a tangent. It's a loop.
Circling around. Yeah, we're looping back. And it's having to do with spirituality and what is very common in a lot of religious traditions is saying some word of thanksgiving or prayer.
Yes, before.
At mealtime, yes. Before you put it in your body. And I kind of, you know, there's some goofy ones like good bread, good meat, good God, let's eat.
very and, pious. I love that one.
Yeah, and there's jokes that you can tell around the dinner table at when it's time to say grace. But I started using this kind of personally, and it kind of branched out. And I think about it now, and then I don't actively do it as much. But I thank, like, you know, the animals and plants for dying.
Yep.
Even if they died a horrific death in some, you know, factory farm, because I don't know where the thing came from.
You need to be more bless thankful.
You for your suffering.
Yeah, you should be more thankful,
so that I may continue. Yeah, and just a bit of recognition,
absolutely,
and thankfulness, and then you put that in your body. You've kind of, even though yes, maybe they had a horrible life and a horrible death, and it, you know, burned a lot of gas for it to get to your dinner plate.
You still have to be thankful to be eating.
And yeah, consciousness. Exactly. You have a consciousness and a connection to what that process is. Even if you don't think there's anything you can do about it, and there's no way you can become a vegan or a vegetarian, you can't afford organic stuff, just thank the food. Even if it's at McDonald's, thank somehow somebody had to pluck it out of the ground or kill something.
Well, you know,
somebody else, some other animal had to die. So just a thankfulness for that.
I think sometimes too, you know, that's something where people wrestle with it and they think, well, it's so much more money to buy a decent meat that's, you know, humanely raised and stuff. And it is a bit more expensive, but it's not prohibitively expensive. And also, if you eat meat the way that we used to eat meat, say 50 or, you know, 80 years ago, it was much smaller portions and it was also served in conjunction with, you know, other stuff. So you'd have it in a stew, or you'd have it with some beans, or you'd have it with greens or something. It'd be mixed in, it'd be flavoring things, you know, it'd be used more sparsely. So you're like, if you do it that way and you just eat less meat, you can spend the same amount of money. You're going to get a bit less meat, but you can stretch it, you know, with other ingredients. It's going to be healthier for you. And you can, you know, you can make that positive choice of buying humanely raised meat, you know, if you eat meat.
Great point.
And at least that's one thing you can think about doing. Because a lot of times we think, well, I can't do this because it's XYZ. It's too expensive. It's too difficult. It's too... My challenge to myself anymore is, how can I do things? Like, I tell myself a lot of times, and I catch myself, and I'm sure you do the same thing. Like, oh, I can't do that. I don't have the money for that. Oh, I can't do that. I don't have the time for that. I don't have this. I don't have the degree. I don't have the... That stuff is going to keep us held back, and it's never going to allow us to reach our full potential, you know, as human beings.
Well, self-reinforcing when you repeat it.
Absolutely.
Like it's like a affirmation or a mantra.
So ask yourself a question instead, like, how can I? And even if you don't have the
even
answer.
Even if you don't know.
Yeah,
know.
Even if you don't know, at least you're asking the right questions, about your food. I love what you said, though, about, you know, about appreciating and saying a little prayer. And if you're not a praying type person, take a moment in your own head to just acknowledge the fact that, you know, some vegetables are sacrificing, you're being sacrificed to, an animal, you know, some wheat, some grain. And then the people that also, you know, provided that, or the, or that cooked it, if you didn't, or the farmers,
it,
the people that prepared it, trucked it to you. If you start thinking about everything as a web, you know, as us being a part of a web of life, it helps us to make better choices and feel more spiritually connected to everything as well. You know, and then we don't take things for granted. Because it's easy to do. It's so easy to do. There's so many choices. I just go to the grocery store and I get X, you know, I can get anything I want. I can get bananas anytime I want them. I get these. And that's the other thing. Maybe think about trying to eat stuff when it's in season. It tastes much better. And that's, you know, and it's, I think it's really better for us if we live more in alignment with the seasons of life again. You know, and I think that's one of the things that the, you know, the neo-pagan movements, the earth religions, the shamanistic, kind of earth connected type religious movements, and have reminded us, living in the cycles again, and celebrating different seasons, celebrating harvest time, even if you're not a farmer, you know, celebrating, you know, spring as the period of new growth, things like that. I mean, that's a way to really connect to food and spirituality and life, and, you know, bring your family into it and stuff, and kind of create your own rituals and your own, appreciation for whatever's going on, right?
It is.
All right, any last thoughts? Because I'm going to keep these shorter than the normal ones we do.
Yeah. No, that's great. I think we covered a lot on eating and, you know, what's involved, what it means, what we eat, how we eat, when we eat, why. Well, we kind of know why we need to eat to survive. But, you know, why are we going about it this way? And is there another way? Is there another way I can do it? And just, yeah, the appreciation that a lot has, the sun, good golly, the sun.
Golly, Miss Molly.
Yeah, the cow, you know, was in the sun when it was in the pasture, and then the milk, and then the grass they were eating was grown by the sun. I mean, you know, there's water. Gosh, you know, even herb farming, you get an appreciation of how much water it takes to keep plants alive.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
So think of those very precious resources. And it's, you know, air, earth, fire, and water. It's a very elemental, very basic, and it's a combination of all four.
Absolutely.
Sun, water, the earth that it grows in, and, you know, the air that it breathes, and it puts oxygen back in your house.
Absolutely. You know? Great end cap. What would we call that? An end, I can't think of the word. Bookend. Here's a great bookend.
Okay.
Wow, that was real. Like, I really had to search for bookend.
Wow.
How do you like that? Anyway, thanks for joining us on our midweek show. Right. And I hope that, thank you for coming up with those great ideas. I appreciate it, Chris. So please join us again each week, midweek, either Wednesday or Thursday. We'll have these things up, maybe Friday. They can be kind of loose, and there'll be loose topics. And like I said, if you want to contribute, please hit us up at anchor.fm/cosmiceye. If you want to hear about a specific topic or just get in touch with us, you can do so through there, or email at info@cosmiceye.org. Check Chris's website out, chrissheridan.com. And thanks for joining us again. Have a great week, and we'll have another episode up on Sunday. All right, take care.